Today's February 4th, 2024. Current Bitcoin price is $42,922.
Welcome to the BitByte podcast, your source for news and information about Bitcoin and the cryptocurrency space. This podcast is meant for educational and entertainment purposes only and is not financial advice.
Welcome to a Sat Stacking Sunday, Rick. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I tried to stack the sats, but it's kind of like figuring out which direction Bitcoin's going to go.
I know. Do you hold off, buy more now? Do you wait, see if it's going to plunge?
Exactly.
I've got to say, ever since ETFs have launched, the weekend price action has been kind of meh. We're still getting swings.
It has toted down, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Because obviously the stock market, the U.S. stock market's only open, Monday through Friday. And so that's where a lot of the action's happening nowadays. So, good point.
Yeah, no, it's kind of weird. So before we go ahead and we get started here, there's a few things that we wanted to cover today. One thing is, we're probably going to bring this up a couple times, actually, just to kind of continue to push this. If you are listening to us and you are enjoying the content that we are bringing you, we actually do have the newsletter sign up open and live now. You can access it through either the Twitter page or the X page, whatever you want to call it. But also you can go to www.thebitbytepodcast.com and you can go under sign up and then you can go ahead and get signed up there. I'm just going to bring that up now and then we'll probably cover it again at the end, but we just want to continue to kind of drive that engagement with you all. And if you enjoy what we're bringing you, then please go ahead and support us in that manner and sign up for that.
And I think, one of the newsletters that we're going to send out this week, we're going to include the links to the, articles that Hans brought up.
Yeah. So, we'll bring those up, so that way you can do a deeper dive. Cause we're just going to cover the highlights of these things, right? The things that we find important and maybe there's going to be some more information in there that you may find relevant to you, or at least in your education.
Absolutely.
So one of the first ones, and we kind of have mentioned this, I'm going back to the launch of the ETFs back at the beginning of January. We all thought, and you obviously there's contrarian views out there, but I think a majority of the people thought once the ETF launched, that Bitcoin was just going to go wild. I don't know necessarily. I don't even think that we were thinking new all-time highs at the time, but I did think that we'd get above, the $50,000 mark and that we would kind of rally a little bit higher just based off that kind of news. And so we haven't seen it completely drop off. Those that have been in the crypto market for a while, we haven't seen a crazy sell-off either. We've just been kind of consolidating sideways, I think is the best way to look at it.
Yeah. Well, what's kind of interesting with this sell-off, and especially with the ETF from Grayscale, we were able to see their actual outflows, what they're trying to do. I mean, people who watch the blockchain also can see their wallet and see what's happening, but it's kind of interesting seeing it reported to the SEC.
Yeah. Yeah, and so one of the first articles that we have up here today, we've got this one here, and it's basically talking about Bitcoin faces sell the news amid before 2024 Bitcoin price all-time high. So when we're thinking about that, in the past, every time we've had, a halving coming up, and this is something we have mentioned this in the podcast before, is that you will start to see a price kind of run up before the halving, but it doesn't get to all-time highs. We don't get into that barrier mode yet. And that's because there's a lag between when the halving actually happens and when that starts to affect the actual price.
Well, it starts affecting the supply.
Yeah.
And thereby the price. But yeah, I was a participant in the previous halving, just watching it kind of, in 2020, it was pretty crazy because of COVID. Bitcoin broke through really low. It was like, what, at $3,000?
Yeah. It was
in the middle of the pandemic.
Right around March, you know, before the halving happened, Bitcoin was at $3,000. Like, it plunged. And yeah, like, that was a terrifying time. I remember seeing that and I was just like, what do I do? And I bought more Bitcoin that day. But that was still like, that's a gut-wrenching moment. I remember sitting out on the back porch and seeing that price, and I was like, am I an idiot or do I double down? And I doubled down, you know, and just continued to kind of stack. But that's tough to stomach.
Yes. And then when the halving happened, you know, so that was in March, you know, right at the peak of the pandemic. And then May 11th is when the halving happened. And the price had already gotten up to about $8,787. And we watched it by the end of the year. I mean, so it took it 7 months, but in 7 months, it had had a fairly good run up and it had crossed over $20,000 by the end of the year.
Yeah. And if you remember, for those of you that may not have been paying attention, prior to that, the new high at that time was like 19,800 is what it had crossed back in 2017. You know, and that was the previous all-time high from the previous halving cycle. So seeing that again, you know, getting in, and that's when, you know, they always say it's like the new all-time high doesn't come the year of the halving. It typically is the year after. That's why most predictions, they're looking at 2025 before that halving new all-time high takes place. But we've got to get to 69,000 and blow past that before we go into price discovery mode, because right now we're just retreading, right?
Right. And that's kind of an interesting thing. I mean, the story I'm telling is, you know, from May to December, it hit 20,000. But, you know, basically after January, that's when it hit God candle mode and jumped to $60,000 in not too short order.
Yeah, absolutely. So basically, this article here, this is from Decent Trader, funny name, that the Bitcoin price action will be no different than what we've seen in the previous cycles. And we've kind of talked about that in, you know, previous episodes as well. Is this the end of the Bitcoin cycle? Are we going to continue to see this 4-year cycle that has played out in the past? Or, you know, will this influx of ETF interest actually change that? So basically what they're saying is that this would mean that Bitcoin has around 30 days from now to meander through its corrective phase before finding the FOMO demand anticipated. So it's, you know, they expect like another month of chop. So we may not see anything crazy price action wise this month of February. You know, and then what we may even see happen is that we may see a run up to 49,000 and then another sell off again.
Absolutely.
You know, you got people that are gonna, especially people that like are new to the market, they're gonna be like, well, 49,000, well, that's the previous ceiling. We're not gonna cross that. So you may see a sell off there and then it'll come back up. Following the halving, Bitcoin has taken 220 to 240 days to break to new all-time highs. And this trader is expecting a similar outlook with Bitcoin taking a trip to new all-time highs in mid to late Q4 of 2024, which gives some time for correction to test investors' resolve in between. Because that's something that typically happens within these markets as well, is that you will see, you know, they want to flush out the weak hands, basically. They will see that, you'll see that pump down, that drop.
And to illustrate the point, last time in 2021, it hit 60,000, and somewhere in there, the legs fell out from under it, and it went down to about 30,000 before it gained steam back up and eventually got up to 69,000. So.
And this writer continues to say, I personally expect it to be no different to previous instances. There's an uncannily accurate market cycle schematic for Bitcoin born out of the emotions of the investors into an asset class to which many are emotionally attached. It seems unwise to expect this to break favorably now, and that's something to keep in mind.
Absolutely. I mean, we've been through several. We are attached. We have a podcast devoted to it, but we try to be fairly realistic about what we're going to see happening.
Yeah.
I've seen it before.
I tend to be exuberant. I get really excited about Bitcoin. But even myself last cycle, I really did expect to see six-figure Bitcoin. I thought we were going to hit 100,000 in the previous cycle. And I think by all rights, we probably should have if it wasn't for FTX. I think that there was some stuff that was going on in the background. That's my own opinion. A little tinfoil hat stuff there.
Let's say, we'll have a link to our tinfoil hats on our website here pretty soon.
You can buy them. I just wanted to kind of put that out there, like just something to temper the market right now. Like, don't expect this to go crazy, you know, coming Monday or anything like that. And we probably will chop for a while. But the next thing that we were going to bring up was jobs report data came out on the 2nd.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious to hear what they're saying.
So, right now, I mean, what they're saying is that we had 353,000 jobs added in the month of January. And then that unemployment rate held steady at 3.7%. Which,
yeah,
it's actually pretty close because, you know, this isn't a one-time kind of blip within the job market itself. We've actually seen that when in January or in December of 2023, we saw 333,000 jobs added. So this is a very similar kind of pump in the job market. November, we had seen 182,000 according to the jobs report. But we've talked about this before as well. The numbers look very cooked.
Yes. No, and we've pointed this out before, but especially the job numbers, they keep getting corrected down. They'll get revised in a few months, and there's going to be like no editorial note, nothing, you know, because this is government. They don't even try and pretend they have journalistic integrity. They just revise it down one, you know, a few months from now, and then they'll revise it down again. That's been kind of the MO with who's putting out the jobs numbers?
U.S. Labor Department.
Labor Department. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I really don't know. And I know that last time they were counting certain jobs that were created in December, that they were holding them over into the next few months. So it's really dicey. I mean, everything coming from the government right now is just pure gaslighting, as far as I can tell. And I take everything with a boulder of salt.
Yeah. Well, and I think the other thing that we found kind of in the previous job reports too, is that most of the jobs that they talk about adding are not white collar type jobs, right? It's typically more jobs in like recreation service industry type things.
Yeah. So it's not jobs where you're making huge amounts of money, you know, even decent blue collar manufacturing jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one of the things that I think is interesting, like, so, and get this, okay, what do you think the average wage right now is in the United States?
I don't know. I know like the average median income is about 40 something thousand.
So according to this, and I find this kind of interesting, average hourly pay also rose sharply, climbing 19 cents to $34.55 an hour.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think that's kind of high.
Maybe what they're doing is they're adding part-time jobs.
Yeah. I mean, and I know there's going to be numbers that skew that, right? Like if you take somebody that's making a couple hundred dollars an hour and then you combine that with somebody that's making minimum wage, yeah, that's going to drop down your average, but that's still kind of, I don't know. I think that would be kind of high. So what we saw the most out of this job report, what they're showing is 74,000 jobs were added in healthcare. 70,000 also in professional services. Retail was 45,000, social assistance 30,000, and manufacturing was 23,000.
Well, some manufacturing in there.
Yeah, a little bit. And then, of course, the federal, state, and local governments added 36,000 jobs. Nothing like increasing size of government, right?
Yeah, I mean, bureaucracy just definitely helps our productivity and economic output, but, you know, whatever.
They create the jobs, Rick. It's what every president does. We created the jobs. One of the other things that I thought was really interesting within this jobs report as well was, and we were kind of talking about this before we got going, was the work week fell from 34.3 hours on average to 34.1, which tells you, like, I mean, a lot of this stuff, then we're not looking at full-time jobs for the most part.
Yeah.
It's part-time.
It's, well, it's on the cusp, right? Whether it's classified as part-time or full-time.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, I mean, corporations, they're not dumb. If they can get you right up to that mark where you'd be almost full-time, but they don't have to give you the benefits, they're not going to do that.
Right.
Because that's something maybe, that... Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, maybe that reflects the higher pay. Like, they're not paying you benefits, so they're just giving you extra cash up front.
Yeah, because something that, I mean, most people that are a little bit older that have been in the workforce for a while, they understand that benefits is also part of your wage package, right? You may not think of it that way because you don't see it in kind of real dollars at the time, but it's typically like almost a double increase of whatever you're getting hourly or whatever your salary may be, because those benefits do cost quite a bit of money.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, just, I don't know. I'm curious to see how this is going to play out. We're in an election year. This is going to continue to kind of be, you know, like you're saying, one of those gaslighting effects where they're going to be like, oh, no, things are going great.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to make a note to myself. I'm going to write down this. So this is the January jobs report.
Yeah.
I'm going to look at the January jobs report and see what it's at, you know, say 4 or 5 months from now.
Yeah. I'm kind of curious. Actually, and let me do this. I'm going to drop this in our Discord chat. If I can, I mean, let me, I'll do it this way, but hold on. Yeah. I'll cover that after we're done, but I'll add this into the Discord chat. So for those of you, also that would like to follow some of the stuff, the charts and stuff like that, that we put in the Discord chat, you can follow us there as well. We do drop links occasionally in X, so you can actually join us live in the chat sessions. So feel free to do that sometime if you're bored and you happen to catch us when we're about to record. One of the last things that I kind of wanted to bring up was just kind of the, what we were looking at from the ETFs, you know, kind of a market watch for the ETFs for Bitcoin. So one of the last reports that we have here, the bad news is that Fidelity had the second weakest day of trading. But on the good news is that Grayscale's outflows have kind of continued slow. Like they're kind of coming back up to where they're going to be accumulating again, almost. We're not quite there yet. We did put up a chart that shows kind of Grayscale's outflows compared to the other ETFs that are out there on the market. They are way, way down. Like if you look at that chart, like they have just spiked down. But ever since, it looks like day 7 of the ETF, they've been kind of gradually moving back up to at least zero where they're not losing Bitcoin.
Yeah. Well, day 7 was definitely the lowest of the lows as far as them unloading Bitcoin.
Yeah. The other thing that's happening is that the new nine, which is the kind of the term that they've kind of given to the other ETFs out there, they're sucking up all Grayscale's dumpage for the most part. Like they're able to vacuum it up with what they want. Some of the smaller ETFs are starting to pick up steam and cumulatively 1.6 billion net over 7.3 billion in total into new ETFs for over the past, basically what were we at, day 16 now of the ETF.
Yeah.
So they're continuing to buy. Right? Yeah. They're continuing to buy. I think they're very close to Michael Saylor's number between just Fidelity and BlackRock. So yeah, I mean, once that kind of stops with the Grayscale, I do have a feeling too that there could be some manipulation happening where BlackRock is letting certain customers kind of accumulate as much as they want to at this level, and that's why we're seeing so much chop as well. We could see markets being spoofed in some ways to keep the price kind of range bound right now until they feel like, okay, we've got what we need.
Yep. Well, you know, for the longest time, when prices would go back, sometimes it's like market manipulation. I mean, you would say like, you know, these people have enough power where they can call the boat back because they missed it.
That's the crazy thing about these guys in these waters is that if they do feel like they missed the boat, they have enough power that they can call it back. You can't do that. I can't do that.
Yeah.
But, and I don't think we brought this up at the beginning, and we meant to. Our Bitcoin buy, our 0.0885, which we had done $3,000 at the end of October. Is that when it was?
Yeah, October 27th.
So right now we're at $3,796, which is $796 in profit. Previous episode was 718. The episode before that was 708. So we've definitely been range bound. If we go back to January 18th, 3,639. January 15th, 3,777. We've been kind of really range bound. The best that we've seen so far was January 10th, where we were at 44,122.
Yep, that was right before the ETF kicked off, right?
What was that? That was actually, I think it was right after.
Right after?
Yeah. If I think about that, because we launched on the like 8th or something around those times. It was like the 8th or the 9th is when the ETFs actually went live.
Right.
Because we had seen that climb up to 49,000. Remember that it kind of started kind of go back down. So, yeah. Anyways, that's kind of what we've got for today. Again, on the newsletter, if you do go in and you register for that with us, we're giving you kind of a freebie, just as a little thank you for giving us your email address and joining our group here in our community. You are getting your self-custody checklist, and it's basically just a way to kind of keep yourself on track. Maybe you're new to the self-custody thing, a little bit scared. It's a good way to kind of have a little bit of feeling of security with it, that you got somebody else holding your hand. I always recommend you look at your hardware wallet manufacturer, like what their instructions are, but this will give you a little bit of a guidance on outside of what the hardware wallet may indicate, right? Other than just regular operational type things. Just some things to be aware of.
Kind of like, don't store your password in your computer.
Don't take a picture of it with your cell phone. Yeah.
Do not take pictures of it. We even give you a little sheet where you can put your password in, maybe laminate it, but don't ever digitally store that anywhere.
Yeah, do not type that into the computer onto that sheet.
No,
by any means. Just something you could do. And it's just a thank you from us to you for signing up and joining us. So again, you can sign up for that newsletter. We will have links on our X accounts. And then you can also do it through our website, which is www.thebitbytepodcast.com/signup. Is there anything else
Thank you
want to bring up,
man? No, I think I'm it. That's it for me.
All right. Well, I hope you guys all have a great weekend. And like Rick said, thank you.
Take care.